Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3, HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has been in the news for weeks, the search for Gabby Petito, the 22-year-old woman from Long Island, vanished on a cross-country trip with her boyfriend, Brian Laundrie. Her body was found last week in Wyoming. She had been murdered. The whereabouts of her boyfriend remain a mystery, but the blanket news coverage raised the ire in many black communities where people of color who go missing rarely get the same kind of attention. Ironically, Petito's family has implored the public and the news media to put the same energy into helping find other missing people as they did Petito. We're examining the issue tonight at the Reporters Roundtable, and my guests are Nikki Mayo, president of the Baltimore Association of Black Journalists. Also joining me, Ivan Singleton. He's a former D.C. police officer whose 24-year-old nephew, Daniel Roberson, has been missing in Phoenix, Arizona since June. If you have comments, if you have questions about this issue, news media on trial tonight, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me, at HFisherWHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Nikki, Ivan, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Harold, for having me.
Absolutely. Nikki, you're a journalist, you have your ear to the ground for all news items. We are in the business. When it comes to this Petito story, and let us say that we are, you know, not here to in any way, shape, or form say that the murder of Gabby Petito should not be covered. It is a horrible and tragic situation. But as it relates to this particular issue, when did you begin to realize that this is a lot of coverage?
It's always a lot of coverage. I mean, this is the classic missing white woman syndrome. We've seen it with everything from Natalie Holloway to, there was another one. I mean, after a while, if it's blonde, if it's a young woman, we're going to follow it until we get a body. And even then, we want to have this nasty true crime investigative thing happening. So it's like wall-to-wall coverage, especially for 24-hour cable news networks, because the aesthetic sells. The aesthetics get a lot of ratings in there, and it's unfortunate, because if that's the aesthetic that does sell, then what happens when it's not the damsel in distress, white woman with blonde hair and blue eyes, and the so-called classic American, love? That's the problem. It's a disparity that ends up happening. So wall-to-wall coverage is going to be automatic when it's a missing white girl, especially if she's from a family that has the means to get her name out there. We're not going to hear the end of it until we get a body. And as a person that does true crime shows, it's like we know to always suspect the love interest. So it kind of falls into that weird genre that people really do get into these stories, and they get attached and invested, and that means more ratings.
Mm. Your nephew, Daniel Robinson, what is the story with him, Ivan? He's 24 years old, and he was in Phoenix, Arizona. Kind of explain to us, you know, why he was in Phoenix and what happened, as you understand it, back in June.
After finishing college, so he took a job in Arizona as a geologist. So he was out there working and living before all of this happened. And so, you know, he is a happy-go-lucky young man, just as with a lot of other family members, you know, across the board. So it's kind of striking that this is going on, or this is happening, and the attention span of it.
When he disappeared in June, is that correct?
Yes, it was the end of June, around the 23rd or 24th of June.
So what kind of response, if any, did the family get? Did they contact the media? Did they call the police? Explain to us what happened.
And so initially, it wasn't that much at all. Almost nobody knew about it except for the family or what the family was putting out. And so my brother, David, Daniel's father, reached out to the local media and, you know, trying to get it out there, was on social media, putting it out there. And it was not any, if very little, that was done about it. So they might have done a little story and then at another affiliate station or another station or whatever, piggyback off of that. Or, you know, they interviewed my brother and then was like, okay, it's not this much to this story here. And then his vehicle was found. Still, even everything behind that with his vehicle being found, how it was found, where it was found, talking to the ranch owner, dealing with the police, it still was not that much attention. And it started building. Still no attention. It just went little stories here, little stories there. And so we just kept trying to get it out there regardless, you know, whether it be through social media or making phone calls or having conversations. We needed it to get out there. And it still needs to get out there a little further because, you know, for that area and where he was and what they were doing and how they were doing it, to us, that is not enough.
So was there a change in the amount of coverage in his disappearance at any point?
Just recently, and we give a lot of thanks to Keith Alexander and Joy Reed and others who reached out in their concerns as well as to, you know, to what's happened, you know, what's going on.
How so? Keith Alexander, of course, with the Washington Post and Joy Reid with MSNBC. Those are some big names. So what happened with them?
Yeah, so the information was out, and then, like I said, we were putting more out on social media, you know, having conversations and trying to get the information out there. And so Mr. Alexander had tweeted about it on his Twitter, and a lot of big news agencies picked up on it, and Ms. Reed had saw it, and she had tweeted about it as well. Information started going further. A lot of big networks started contacting the family, you know, wanting to hear more about it, what's going on. And so then when they start learning about what was happening, the gaps, the inconsistencies, I mean, what was supposed to have been done, what could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
Then they started comparing the Gabby Petito case, and in which they're really, you know, it's two different cases, but yet they're still missing persons and things like that. But how much attention we put to it and how much is done to locate or to try to locate any missing person. It wasn't enough done in our case.
So as it stands now with your nephew, Daniel Robinson, what is the latest that you understand?
He is still missing.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to my brother David a little while ago. They were out doing another search today, and they have a bigger search scheduled for this weekend. They have a lot since the recent media coverage on it. They have a lot more volunteers coming out to help with the search. They have some two young men have reached out to the family because they have drones, they're drone pilots, so they come. Coming out to assist with it also to try to help us locate Daniel, to try to find something that we can have, you know, to provide closure, you know?
Mm. Well, I hope that you are able, the family is able to get some good news and to find him alive and well, Ivan.
Yes.
Singleton. We can only pray for the best. Thank you for spending some time with us and sharing your story.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Nikki, to that point, you know, mm-hmm. the old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but some wheels squeak a whole lot louder, and some would argue that's because those wheels are the wheels of white families as opposed to black families.
I would like to actually push back a little bit because it's not that black people are not commenting and saying, what about my cases? I mean, we have the whole Black and Missing Foundation. That's their whole mission is, you know, giving some amplification to the missing black people that do not get the headlines because they're like, they're holding the media accountable. I went on their website. I mean, the mindset of the mainstream bleeds into our newsroom. We can't lie and act like it doesn't. And I know a lot of my colleagues want to think themselves to be super liberal and getting everyone credence and attention, but real talk, runaways. Like, we're waiting for the police and law enforcement to identify that somebody is a missing person and not so-called just a runaway, because we don't cover runaways. That's not part of what we do.
Right.
We wait until we get from law enforcement and say, okay, this is a missing person, an Amber Alert. We need a poster officially from a law enforcement agency. It can't be a family that sat there on their Word document and put a photo up and a great description. We still can't run that unless your news organization says you can. Then you have the assumption of them being a criminal, which sucks. But if you have a criminal record, if I look up your face and I have a mugshot for it, I'm sadly going to have a harder time pushing that through my management that we need to cover this person as a missing person. The assumption is if you're a criminal, then you kind of deserve to be missing, or we're going to find you eventually, and you're probably the victim of a crime. And the last part is straight desensitizing. So desensitization. Hopefully you got that word out.
Yeah.
But the idea that we are humans, we are in newsrooms, but if I am one lone voice in a newsroom trying to tell my boss that we need to be covering Jelani Day, or any other missing black person, and they're like, well, let's wait and see. You know, law enforcement hasn't really given us a we'll go through all that dance and we're missing countless hours that we could be looking and putting the word out for this person.
Okay. Joining me now is Jennifer Thomas, Howard University journalism professor. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the things that, and you've been in television newsrooms just as I have, your thoughts about this Gabby Petito story and the blanket coverage. You know, one of the things that struck me as, you know, a former television person is that if the story presents itself as easy to cover, and when I say easy to cover for television, then it's a low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of video of Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry, and that helps tell the story. And if you have all of that, and I think this is about how media works, and this is one of the things that Nikki was talking to, not just inside the newsroom, but the process. If you have something to help you tell this story, it makes it a whole lot easier than you may for a family, black or otherwise, where you don't have a lot of elements to work with.
And that's true. And, you know, as what's been said earlier, we know the research is there. We know it's a fact that coverage of missing blacks is less likely, that coverage is going to be less likely covered of blacks than whites in mainstream media. And, you know, that those first hours, those first days are very crucial. So having the media's involvement is important. And from a broadcast side, you know, I was in local news for 10 years and national news for 10 years. And it's kind of the same. We have a saying, as you know, all news is local.
Mm-hmm.
And as we start covering these stories on a national level, they usually come from the story that's being covered locally from an affiliate. So I'm sure that that's how the Gabby Petito story started. And as you said, it's low-hanging fruit. We've heard the terms that have been thrown around, but it's true, sadly. But it goes back to me. I've always say the saying or ask the question, who's in the room? Because someone has to make the decision, as was already said, that this is a story we need to cover. So what is it about a white person with blonde hair that warrants coverage over a black woman with curly hair? You know, if you come down to it, that's the question. And a lot of times in the national media, they're not going to necessarily cover a story if it's not being covered locally because they won't hear about it. So now we go back to what's just mentioned that, you know, my good friend Joy Reid and Keith Alexander both reached out to Mr. Singleton, and my heart goes out to you and your family on your nephew's missing case. But now we have people who are in the room who can make those decisions to help get those stories told.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about a double standard for the news media. Do white women garner more attention when they are missing when compared to the coverage of people of color? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Let's go to Shanae calling from Boston. Shanae, quickly, what's on your mind?
I wanted to say about an incident that happened.
You got to be quick, Shanae. You got 30 seconds.
Okay, I was at a store, and this baby had came around on her bike, and the guy was following her in the truck. And I went into the store, and I told them that the little girl is trying to get help. Can they help me and stuff? She didn't want to leave the bike, and I had a convertible, so I couldn't put the bike in the convertible. But then anyway and stuff, I followed the guy, followed this baby. And later on, because they thought that I was talking about a black child, and it was a white child. And if you look it up, it's Andrea Bossy. And you will see it in Michigan. That's what happened. And yes, after they found out it was a white baby, then yeah, they went to searching every day about it. But when I reported it, they didn't even do anything. And then called me later about it.
I think that's part of the issue that we are talking about today. Thank you so much for making that point. We need to take a break. When we come back, more of this discussion at the Reporters Roundtable, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, as well as 96.3 HD2 to the app. Don't forget to download it on your smartphone and hear the program in its entirety live, as well as on 98.3 FM. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're at the Reporters Roundtable. We're asking, is there a news media double standard when it comes to covering missing persons? Do white women, for example, get more attention than people of color? My guests are Nikki Mayo, president of the Baltimore Association of Black Journalists, and Jennifer Thomas, Howard University journalism professor. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Do you believe, Nikki, that, as I said in the beginning of the program, and I found this to be rather interesting, that the Petito family actually has spoken out about giving other missing families the kind of resources and energy? Indeed, it seems as if they have heard some of the arguments
criticism.
Yeah. Thank you. About all of the blanket coverage about their daughter.
They have. There's an interview clip that I saw in 48 Hours, and they acknowledge that they are amazed at the amount of outpouring they've gotten. Now, let's not lie. Social media is very powerful. That couple were part of the whole van life blogging world. Like, she was a YouTuber. They were chronicling their whole voyage across the country and everything. So those who knew her were able to chime in and say, oh, that was cute for all the little selfies and moments on YouTube. But let me tell you how he was a little forceful, and I did question him many times. Like, there's a lot of questions about Landry, right? Laundry, excuse me. So it's great TV, sadly. I, full disclosure, used to work down in Southwest Florida where they're from. So now you have the element of Florida man missing, you know, like he's not helping the FBI. There's a lot going on with this story that's intriguing, and we're getting the whole, you know, just everyone wants to play true crime person again. So this is all a perfect storm for this white family. If they were to speak out on behalf of other people, keep in mind their daughter's body has been found. Body. Mm-hmm. They're still dealing with that trauma right there. So we might not like the fact that, you know, all these black and missing people are not getting press time, but we're not their priority. We really are not. And their priority right now is their wounds, the trauma that they just endured. This is a crappy story. It's a horrible ending. And with the love interest out here, you know, kind of on the land in a way, like, this is all made for TV, and they don't really owe Black America or even the Native population out there in Wyoming that has been very vocal from Not Our Native Daughters Foundation. They don't owe us anything. It would be nice to have an ally moment here and acknowledge that black and brown people go missing. Black men go missing and no one seems to care. Like, it really is one of those moments that if they could step out and do that, great. But don't forget that when people are in this position, like, Sabrina Fulton and all the Black Lives Matter moms and wives and stuff, they've been thrust into this. They didn't ask for this. So you're almost lucky when you get an advocate out of somebody who's been through that type of trauma.
You know, Jennifer, Nikki makes such an excellent point. And again, we can talk about the media as a whole, but the reality is that the high value is what you see in this, and this is what you see this on television. And as she said, you know, Laundrie's family is in Florida. The Petito family, they're from Long Island, New York. They're from this hamlet that is, you know, it's an upper middle class
Long Island.
Yeah, Long Island community, very picturesque. It looks like, you know, something out of, you know, upper middle class central casting. But the way in which this story developed, you know, they, Laundrie and Petito, they took a cross country trip. Mm-hmm. Can I allow me a stereotype for black folks? Who does that?
Right.
I'm sure that there are some black people who do cross country trips, but
in a van.
Yeah, but
in a van.
Yeah, but that's right. Not the kind of stuff that black folks do normally.
No, we don't.
Normally,
no.
And
they have to make. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, and the other thing I was going to say was, tragically, her body was found in Wyoming, right. Huge state. Not a lot happens in Wyoming. Okay, and so when you're talking about news coverage, and so as a result, that's probably the biggest story in Wyoming this year.
And then what about all the other missing people in Wyoming?
Yeah,
of color, right? That have been missing and not reported, but yet for this case, you know, it's still getting coverage. I was hearing local news coverage tonight with updates from her family. And, of course, as Nikki said, it's a horrible story with a tragic ending. But it just shines a light on the fact that there are so many others that are not getting this type of attention from the FBI that's making headlines on all the national, from cable news to, you know, all the mainstream news organizations on their primary shows. And this has, sad to say, and it's probably not even the best time to say, but when you think of some of these other cases that we've already talked about, you know, then the next thing you have are the movies that come after and the documentaries, because they are so just intriguing. And so, yes, people want to watch. And we're in this time now where people are tuning in, whether it's a Netflix series based on someone missing or a podcast or, you know, movies, people follow these types of stories. And that's just kind of where we are. And it's sad that, you know, this case ended as it did, but there are so many others. Like, what happened to Relisha Rudd? You know,
yeah.
How long has she been missing? What's happened with that case? It's disappeared. There were a couple of headlines, you know, as I was looking into the story tonight. One reads, we all know Gabby Petito's story. Can you name a missing black girl? Another headline reads, this girl has been missing for 19 years, but you've probably never heard of her. These are headlines for different articles. And it just shows that, you know, yes, there is a disparity between the types of coverage that are coming out. And you know, it all comes down, this was mentioned earlier, to the bottom line. What's going to make the best ratings, who's going to watch? And it's sad to say, but it is, as you called it, the low-hanging fruit. It's an easy story to cover, and we know people will watch. Not to take anything away from it being as a value story, because any person missing should have the right to have, you know, be found, which is why you're hearing so many other black people speak out on this subject.
I mean, I think you could start an entire network just based on missing people of any
Absolutely.
Color.
Well, Harold, real quick, I wanted to jump in really quick. Those headlines she just listed are an indictment on the newsrooms right there. Because
right.
If you had to say, here's a story you haven't heard, My question is, and why haven't we heard them? Why haven't you covered them? Why are you not paying attention to these topics? Real talk, I love the work that I get to do on Fatal Attraction on TV One on Monday nights. You know, shameless plug. But I'm just saying that the reason people love those stories so much is, when's the last time you heard the complete story about what happened to a black person that went, like, missing, and then they were found dead, and love happened to be part of it? Like, my stories are love went wrong and somebody's dead. That's really the gist of it, right? But literally, I just went and shot one last week where the case, her body has still yet to be found. Sadly, she's probably incinerated in a garbage dump somewhere by now. But right. It's the fact that we normally hear police are on the scene of a homicide or a double shooting. Mm-hmm. It happened in the 3500 block of blah, 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 blah. So we glaze over. We don't get to know who they are. And don't let it be somebody who had a prior, because then the photo we're going to show you won't even evoke any emotion. We're going to show you a mugshot. That's not going to help the situation either. Well, so, no, that is a straight-up indictment on the newsroom for why haven't you covered these? Why are these people missing and you're just getting around to them now? Real talk, that is all in proximity to the white gaze.
And I'll add to that, too. So being, you know, when you talk about, and a lot of people don't know how those decisions are made. I can speak to broadcast, and Harold, you're well familiar with this as well. But, you know, when people don't know what to do, and that's why, you know, these organizations are so vital to help reaching out to the media for people that may have contact. But, you know, aside from having tip lines, someone has to be on the other line of that call to answer the phone, mm-hmm. to take the call, to say, okay, ma'am, what is back up? What's the story again? And that's how the tip comes in. Now, if you're on the assignment desk and you're getting all kinds of calls that are coming in, what's going to make you care to talk to this woman who's a black woman about her missing child, right? So you have to, and that's why I keep going back, who's making those decisions just for the story to be told, whether it's a VO, you know, a short news story or a short blurb in the paper or a headline. Someone has to take the story. And if no one there cares enough to get the story in the first place, it cannot evolve into a larger story to a reporter doing it. So I always tell people, when you're trying to get a story told in your local news, go to everyone. Now we have social media, so everyone's on Twitter. Everyone has a handle. You can DM everyone. But, you know, reach out, find out who the assignment editor is. Reach out to the reporter. Reach out to the anchor. Find out who the producer is. You have to really be an advocate to try to get the story told. And as Nikki said, for some people, they don't have to worry about doing that because the media comes to them. But that's not the case for most of us.
Now, which brings up another issue. And this is the tough love piece that all three of us have been through when we were the only black voice in the newsroom. And once we have fought that fight in the newsroom to get out of the newsroom to cover this missing person or this mystery. And then, you know, And you have to look at the Petito family, and I think this is a textbook case. And this is for black people who are listening to this conversation right now. And you don't owe the media anything. And we have to be really clear about that. Unless you believe that your story or the stories in your community need to be told, because you need to be able to be willing to talk to the media. And what happens is, when you have black reporters who have fought the fight to get that story told, and then they come to talk to you, and then they say, we don't want to talk.
Yeah.
And do you have a photograph? No, we don't want to. And so you end up with no story.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my regimen for that always, especially in Buffalo, because I was on a crime beat.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
My regimen,
I was in Buffalo too. People in Buffalo, they're going to talk to you. That's a whole different.
No, but you need to be careful as to who you're talking to.
Oh, yeah, but then there's that too. But
I need a credible source. So as soon as I get to the mega church, figure out who's going to be the voices, right? So when these things are happening, I normally would vet those who are so eager to talk to me about some questionable crime with my community sources to make sure that I wasn't getting some, you know, yokel or something like that. But what's most important is that if you're going through a trauma like this, I don't really expect the mother, the father, the direct, I don't really expect the direct relatives of someone who's missing to be in a good position to talk anyway. And I normally tell them, please go get me somebody who's going to be the spokesperson for your family. Mm-hmm. And frankly, let them be the spokesperson for your family because you're liable to break down on camera. Mm-hmm. You're going through a lot of trauma, and I'm trying to be sensitive to that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's the best bet. And then the community leaders who, you know, like, Harold, you did Buffalo. You know, like, every district had, like, block captains and stuff. Mm-hmm. So the community leaders normally could be that second voice if you need another voice. And that helped me legitimize, see, we need to be doing these missing person stories because this person's legitimately missing. They're not just so-called linked to crime.
Yeah.
So that was always
or runaways.
Black bodies that are linked to crime, and we don't do that until it's over.
Yeah. Or runaways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then there's
some kind of a runaway is not fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there are a lot of people in our communities, too. We have the distrust of the police. So now we want the authorities to help find a missing person. So if there is, you know, any background there, as Nikki, I think you pointed out earlier, then there's going to be a question of, is this a legitimate case in the first place? And then does the family want to talk to the police or to the media, as you said, for that matter? And if they know something, are they going to want to be willing to speak out against someone they know? So there, you know, it's not as straightforward as it may seem. But yes, we have to do better.
Can we point out what is obvious to us, but maybe not to a listener, is that the reason we normally wait for law enforcement to give us a green light, this is in fact a missing person and not a runaway or a criminal investigation where somebody might, you know, sadly, it might be a homicide and we just don't know about it yet, is because people often use media organizations and plant bad stories with us. And if we don't vet everything, like pretty much green, super green people or folks who do not know to vet your information and attribute it to somebody else, which seems to be like, duh, but let's be straight, it happens. You can use the media organizations to mess up an investigation.
Yeah.
And that's true.
And that helps no one.
And one of the other things also, one of the reasons why we often wait for the police, and this has happened time and time again, there are times when the police know more than they tell you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And they may know more about an investigation. And this is not to say that that there's a problem with the missing person, with the integrity of the missing person. But there may be a suspect, a person of interest
that they may know about.
They don't want them to run. And so there are all kinds of dynamics. But I think, but I do think that there still is, you know, the issue of the double standard, which is why we have, you know, for example, the Nikki Mayos and had, the Jennifer, Thomas was in the newsroom and myself when I worked in mainstream media. And sometimes we came out of those news meetings, allow me to say, bloodied but unbowed.
Very, very true.
Because sometimes we lost those fights to cover these things that were happening in the Black community. And then you had to come back when the story blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to come back to those news directors or to those executive producers who did not look like you and say, I told you so.
And that's what, And, you know, when I left CNN, I was an executive producer. And I cannot tell you how many times I just smiled on the inside when I made that decision. Yes, we are going to cover this story on one of the three shows that I was in charge of, because there are too many times when people don't see the significance of the story. And we can go through, you know, from when Aaliyah first died and covering about my last week at CNN before coming to teach at Howard. I was freelancing then with the Trayvon Martin verdict, and speaking of being the only Black person there and one of the only two in the meeting room, and how it blew up literally into a conversation. But we left that meeting and we ended up doing an hour special on race for the hour that I was working on. That's why I keep going back to saying it's so important for us to be in those spaces. And as you pointed out, though, Harold, sometimes you do have to to pick your battles when you are that only person, because you don't want to be, you know, considered, you know, people are always looking at you every time there's any story of a black person. And then, you know, you have to explain how we are not the monolith for the black race. But it's a very
and sometimes you are.
And sometimes you have to hold the banner and say, you know, put the fist up and say, I am. But at the same time, you know, you're trying to still just, can I just do my job? I'm still a producer. I am a producer and I'm black, but I can cover everything besides the black stories. You know what I mean?
But, and something did occur to me going back to the Petito case, and this isn't so much about a missing case, but let's talk about George Floyd. What kind of coverage do you think there may have been, considering the initial press release after the death of George Floyd by the Minneapolis Police Department that he had suffered a medical event? I believe that's what the term was. If there had not been video, if there had not been video of the murder of George Floyd, no, and you only may have had witnesses, and perhaps if those witnesses had not come forward, because remember, the most, although not all, but most of those witnesses were people of color. But if there had been no witnesses, if there had been no video of George Floyd, and the medical event press release were allowed to stand, maybe the only thing that may have brought us to where we are today with George Floyd would have been an investigative reporter who perhaps looked at an autopsy, or someone who had pressed the issue regarding an autopsy. And we can go all the way back to Rodney King.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah. If there hadn't been that video, please go right ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, you know, it led me directly back to Rodney King. If we did not see the video that was happening, then there wasn't the outcry. Now, of course, we still know what happened in court with those officers, and that's why many cities erupted. And I remember at the time being a producer in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina then, and our entire newsroom kind of blew up with how we were covering the story on campuses. At Duke and UNC, as opposed to being at Shaw and North Carolina Central. So we had a lot of serious conversations in our newsroom, but fortunately we had a lot of people of color in the newsroom who were able to speak up. But had we not had video has changed the game for coverage of black people, and especially these atrocities. And it's just like the late, great John Lewis said, that if it had not been for the media, the civil rights movement would have been like a bird without wings. And I say that in the same way, had it not been for that George Floyd video, we would not have had the uprising that we did, the laws that are being changed, and the attention all around the world to this Black Lives Matter movement.
Now, and here's the other issue, Nikki, you spoke about allies, and sometimes those allies are part of the family that are immediately impacted, as in the Petito family. But I'm sure you've heard about KTVU anchor Frank Somerville, who was suspended because he's a white man, and he raised questions about, he raised questions about the blanket coverage. He has an adopted black daughter, and because he raised questions about the blanket coverage, he was suspended. And I think that definitely,
I believe the manager in that case was a white woman.
Yeah. Another ally.
We don't know how, real talk, we don't know how Frank rolled up in there and made his voices known. You know, let's be straight. He might be like, let me tell you.
Could have been the arrogant white man thing.
Yeah. I think black people understand what I'm saying, like the audacity of a white man, even if it's a white man that happens to have a black daughter. But I'm thinking that he might have rolled up in there and all his white man in this, like, I'm going to stand up for my daughter today and I'm going to tell you. So it feels like it was one of those moments. But either way, yeah, the fact that he got suspended, you're like, you suspended him for that? Or did he make you uncomfortable? And if he made you uncomfortable, maybe you should be uncomfortable because his whole situation is very uncomfortable. It's like, I read into that because I was curious, like, you know, who was the manager? You know, why did he suspend him? And I said, the white woman, like, you know what I mean? I'm going to go down that rabbit hole because I was very curious about it. But I like the fact that, and he's always very vocal about race issues on Facebook. I like the fact that he is constantly attempting to be an ally, and that's nice. I just kind of feel like allies, until it impacts them directly, like he saw his daughter as a possibility, it doesn't seem to be an issue. And I'm like, I need that discomfort to be an ever, I need that to be like a grain of sand in your bikini. You know, I need it to be like in there and annoying the whole time because it's annoying for us to live this existence.
Yeah, for those of us who wear bikinis.
I really want to answer that question that you just had her talk about with the whole, you know, why George Floyd, why are we okay with that? And let's be honest, and I understand why I happen to circle black press orgs more than anything else, is because I'm tired of looking at state-sanctioned lynching at the hands of law enforcement, okay? This is not new. It has just taken on different entities over the decades and centuries at this point. You know, it's like slave patrols. You saw what happened with the Haitian migrants. And here we go with, like, okay, black bodies go missing. Well, do we really care? So that's why it's like with George Floyd, it took that video. Otherwise, they could have weaseled their way out of that whole thing with, like, let's be straight, how many other George Floyds were there? We know there were so many.
But I would say, Nikki, when you talk about the allies, it wishful thinking would say that you can intellectualize this and say, oh, well, obviously that's wrong. And while it may not necessarily impact me, I can see how it can impact other people of color, and I can be magnanimous in my thing. But sometimes, however you get the allies there that are not in your community, get them there any way they can if they have a voice that can raise above the others who are voiceless.
And to your point, go ahead, Nikki.
No, I'm fine. I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers, and we need the allies to be louder than ever because according to Black and Missing, nearly 40% of the missing people out there are people of color. There's so many African Americans that like 40% of those missing are like people of color, and African Americans only make up 13% of the population. People,
that's right.
Like, that's a big percentage of missing people, and it's only 13% of us in this country. We need the allies to care, and I know there's a lot to care about, and they might feel like our pain, black pain, is so exhausting. Well, being black is so exhausting. If you want to be a real ally and have black friends, you know, get with the program.
You were going to say, Jennifer?
The other stat to throw in there, you know, I think I read that while white women make up about a third of the national population, half of the articles about missing are on white females alone. So we see the disparities in that coverage. But in terms of, you know, just having those allies, my opinion is sometimes, you know, we look back and my students, you know, I have a student actually doing a story about this, what we're talking about. But when we talk about even the civil rights movement and the coverage and how people, you know, didn't really act until they were able to start seeing what was happening in these southern cities and some northern as well on camera, and then we see the same thing with these cameras capturing these black men getting shot down in the street. You know, we have to realize that if people are going to help, even in the civil rights movement, we had a lot of white folks that helped to be a part of that. I say, you know, sometimes people don't know because they are in their bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see what's going on, and if they have a come to Jesus, Oprah, aha moment, I think it's a great thing. You know, let them come in it for the right reasons. And I say that too with the Black Lives Matter protests. And we see so many people genuinely wanting to make a difference, genuinely wanting to have a conversation here in the U.S. and around the world. And I actually personally think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes you have to see the other, you know, other person's pain, and to have, as they say, walk in the other person's shoes, you know, as it were. And as you said, yeah, it's one thing to have a black friend, but you know the saying, not all of our skin folk are our kin folk. And so, and every, and as it relates to being monolithic in the Black community. All Black experiences are not the same.
Absolutely.
And you may have one part of the Black community where there are concerns about, policing. And then you may have other parts of a Black community where those concerns are less, not non-existent, but they, are less of an issue. And even though Laundry, his family lives in South Florida, and the Petito family, they live in, Long Island. Even for them, I think those their individual issues are very, very different. And so I think you have to kind of go into these situations with eyes wide open and be able to understand, particularly when it comes to our community, to understand the pain that we're feeling and to understand why we are complaining. Yeah. And we will continue to complain. Especially the Nikki Mayos of the world. What would we do without them? Oh, my goodness. Nikki Mayo, Jennifer Thomas, I really appreciate both of you participating in this conversation, as always.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, September 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.